with ourselves. Then we have the relationship with the environment, which we need to talk about in detail.
Yeah.
Then we have the general relationship with Allah Almighty,
yeah,
the Creator. And all these four special relationships or specialized relationships are subsumed under that grand relationship that we have with Allah Almighty. And when we talk about Allah Almighty as the Creator of mankind, the Sustainer, our Lord, worthy of being worshipped, He has authority over us. He is our Wali.
Yes.
The extension of that wilayat is in the form of the wilayat of the imams, the infallible imams.
All right.
Of course, before that is the wilayat of the Holy Prophet.
True.
I do not use the term guardianship for the wilaya. Translation of wilaya. Wilaya is much more than that.
All right.
It's not just guardianship.
So it's an umbrella term that guardianship also comes under this.
Yes, wali is not
confined to guardianship.
Not confined. Maybe an aspect of it is guardianship.
All right.
So wilayat is a term of Arabic, of the Quranic Arabic, which may not be, which we may not be able to translate properly.
All right.
In English. Or any other language for that matter. Of course, languages which are rich, have the Arabic script, like Urdu, like Persian, they can employ the term wilayat as it is.
Yeah.
In English, we also should use the word wilayat because it is a very important concept.
All right.
It is the extension of the wilayat of Allah Almighty.
All right.
And it doesn't fall under the purview of the special relationship. Yes, when we are talking about the special relationship with Allah Almighty, that is the relationship which we have in the form of devotional worship and practice.
True.
And this is what we have to ingrain in our child's mind also.
Exactly.
And its behavior.
So how
But there is something beyond that, and that is wilayat of Allah Almighty.
Yeah.
It encompasses all our relationships.
Exactly. So how do we teach that to our children? I'll ask you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I have Mr. Salman Naqvi with me in the studio, and we're talking about the relationships that we need to teach our children. So you were talking about the relationship of wilaya.
Yes. So wilaya, as I said, of the holding on to the hablullah, which is wilaya, the rope of Allah, as it is mentioned in the Quran, that is wilaya. Without clinging on to that, without clutching on to that, we cannot expect the message of tawheed to come down to earth.
All right.
And this is a very important thing which we have to inculcate in our children. Yes, we do that when we take them for the programs which are held in commemoration of the imams, especially the commemoration or the memory of Karbala,
okay.
Imam Hussein, his companions,
all right.
Their great sacrifice. That is, of course, something which we do from the day our child is born. We try to ingrain a relationship with Imam Hussein, with the Ahlul Bayt al-Islam from the day he is born.
Yeah.
Even it is said that one of the rituals which is recommended, that the turba of Imam Hussein is given to the newborn child.
Yeah.
So that relationship is developed from the day the child comes
is born, actually, yeah.
And that has to be deepened,
yeah,
and become entrenched in his
day by day,
in his mind, in his feelings, in his actions.
True.
So yes, we take him for commemoration of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and the other imams, or on the day of on their birth anniversaries. We remember them,
yeah,
and we remember how they played the role that they were supposed to do as the wali, as the imam,
yeah,
imams of this ummah, were wronged by the ummah to a great extent. But the important thing is that it should not be a just ritualistic memory.
All right.
And we have to develop the fact that this
relationship.
That relationship, which, as I said, encompasses all my four relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
And the wilaya is the basic essence of all four
relationships.
I mean, even in our dealings with Allah Almighty, specifically, we talk about tawassul.
Yeah.
We talk about the intercession of the imams.
Yeah.
We talk about how we can inculcate in our children that when they want to speak to Allah Almighty, they ask for the intercession,
yeah,
of the Ahlul Bayt.
True.
We prime them. We make them think of Allah Almighty from the point of view of the Ahlul Bayt.
All right.
With their attitude, with their vision. That, yeah, is very important, because when we want to understand Tawheed,
yeah,
the unity of Allah Almighty, the uniqueness of Allah Almighty, the best possible picture that can be provided for mankind is through the Ahlul Bayt.
All right.
So we want our children to understand Tawheed through the eyes of the Ahlul Bayt.
All right, so developing a relationship with Ahlul Bayt is actually taking back our children to Tawheed, developing the concept of monotheism within them. I'll talk more on that note with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIV English Radio.
Ya muqdi al-khayrat, ya muqdi al-khayrat.
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, O nation of Shia, teach your children the poems of Al-Abdi, because he was a follower of the religion of Allah.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm your host, Zainab. And today we have with us Mr. Salman Naqvi, and we're discussing about the relationships that we need to develop within our children. Yes.
If we analyze the relationship of wilaya, when we talk about the wilaya, the authority, if we want to explain what wilaya is, it has two aspects.
All right.
That is important that our children must understand. That one, when is a person called a wali who has authority over us?
Yes.
As the Quran says that if the Holy Prophet makes a decision, then you have no right to challenge him.
True.
His decision is the final decision.
True.
He has the final word in all our dealings.
Even nobody has authority over him.
Over us. An-Nabi awla bil mu'minina min anfusihim.
Okay.
The Holy Prophet has authority over all of us.
True.
So this concept, this mindset, this attitude has to be ingrained in the behavior, the mindset of the child from the very beginning. And we have to understand, why is the Prophet the wali? Why is Allah Almighty the wali?
Okay.
Why does he have authority? Why do we accept him to be the wali? Because he has those attributes of knowledge, of power, of being merciful, and so many other attributes that are there in the Holy, in Allah Almighty.
True.
That makes him worthy of our adorance, of our glorification, and most important, our obedience to him.
Exactly.
In the same manner, amongst the human beings, whoever is the closest to the Holy to Allah Almighty in the, his attributes, the Holy Prophet is the prophet because he is worthy of being the prophet.
Exactly.
He has become, he has excelled in human behavior, in human, in his human nature, and he's achieved closeness and proximity to Allah Almighty.
All right.
So he becomes closer to Allah Almighty. And then on the other side is that he has those, has the proximity to Allah. And as a result of that, he commands our respect and our love, and he commands our obedience.
All right.
So this is what has to be inculcated. Where does it start? The smallest unit of society is the family.
All right. And charity begins at home.
That family unit has to show that authority.
Exactly.
Show that authority in practice. The father is the head of the family.
Yeah.
He is a small, he's the continuation of the wilayat of Allah.
True.
The imams. At this level in society, it is the holy, the father who is the fatherly figure who has to be respected.
All
Why
right.
should he be respected? We shall talk about that.
Inshallah, we'll talk about that in another session. Thank you so much for being with us. And thank you so much for providing us such meaningful information. So this is not enough that since you are a Muslim, you are a believer, and your child should follow you as such without a, research, without a, just a blind faith. You have to develop all those relationships within a child. And that's important, as Mr. Naqavi explained all that. Thank you so much, Mr. Naqavi, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you have any questions for us, you have any feedback, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also find us on these social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. You can also download our programs on our official website, that's www.parstoday.com. Until another session, fi amanullah, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life. A way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed patch. Valeria tried to remove the tank, but ultimately, because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year.
The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing.
Living through a pandemic is strange, as we are often locked indoors. But a UK-based Indian mechanical engineer made the best use of his time during the coronavirus lockdown and built an airplane. 38-year-old Ashok Ali Serial, who is also a private pilot, had long dreamt of a personal aircraft. He initially planned to order an aircraft kit and built it with his colleagues. But he says the 2020 lockdown left him with no choice but to complete it on his own. Now he has an aircraft which he has named after his youngest daughter, Dia. The plane can carry up to four people, including the pilot, and fly about 250 kilometers an hour. After getting clearance to fly, he flew across four European countries with his friends. He has also gone on a trip with his family of four.
Age does not matter, it's the heart that counts. A Guatemalan female footballer has proved that there is no point one should worry about the age. 57-year-old Alma Salazar has a passion for soccer and takes care of her team's goalpost. Known as Flying Granny, she launches herself and deflects a ball that's looking for the nets. The passion for the sport was born when she was 19 years old. She started training with a men's team where she often found a place as a goalkeeper. Since then, Alma has played for several professional and amateur football clubs. In her room that overlooks a local stadium, Alma keeps the trophies she has won on a table, most of them as the least defeated goalkeeper. Locals praise her as an unbeatable goalkeeper. An inflatable building that explores how people would potentially live on Mars has been unveiled in the British city of Bristol. It's a two-story structure with an area of 570 square feet, powered by solar panels. It's designed to cope with temperatures as low as minus 63 degrees Celsius. Although the Martian house will be displayed above ground, its lower level will be fully buried to maximize protection against the harsh environment on Mars. Inside, the top floor features a hydroponic living room filled with decorative plants that feed into a circular wastewater system. A team of experts helped develop the design, taking into consideration the complexity of transporting materials to the red planet and what is already there.
So in the gold inflatable structure which you see above you, that's the main living space of the Martian house. It's gold to reflect dangerous solar rays and cosmic radiation, and it's inflatable because it would be filled with a special concrete made of the dust and water that you find on Mars, again to protect you from those dangerous solar and cosmic rays.
The Martian house was envisioned by local artists 7 years ago. The artists also brought together space scientists, architects, engineers, designers, and even school children. The space-age dwelling explores what a house on Mars could be like and is meant to for research and experiments about the future. The major objective of the project, however, is to provoke questions about living more sustainably with the resources at hand here on Earth.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Japanese plastic food artisans are showcasing their mouth-watering artificial creations at an exhibition in Japan's capital city, Tokyo. From the Leaning Tower, a pizza, to fish slicing and cooking, or even the quirky stacked pancakes, you can find almost everything at the exhibit. Other sculptures, including a deep-fried shrimp with full breaded legs scaling a mountain of shredded cabbage like a tiger. Another creation on display is a Tetris game made of chicken. Plastic food artists get really excited for the exhibition each year as they are given a chance to practice their own spin on creativity, bringing food to life with curious characters.
So normally we have to follow orders from clients. We take their views on board when we're making items. Normally that's our work. But for the competition, you can use your imagination. How it finally ends up is totally up to you. I like that aspect of it.
There are some 60 sculptors on display. Some are silly, but others highlight the artist's skills. The models were made with the same careful detail as the rock-solid noodle soups and crispy-looking plastic snacks on display outside Japanese restaurants. There is a lucrative business for them in Japan.
Deforest management plays a key role in mitigating climate change. Like many world countries, China has accelerated environmental and social structural changes in urban spaces to deal with this pertinent issue. The Donggu Forest Park is one such project that has provided city dwellers enough space to breathe. It comes into being from what local people usually called rotten woods. The park on the northern bank of the Xialinge River covers an area of nearly 120 hectares. Nobody would come there before, as the place was full of flies and mosquitoes. But now, with the environment improved and water cleaned in the river, the place has turned into a wonderland, attracting locals and even foreign tourists.
Now the sky is blue, the water clean and the air fresh, with green greeting you wherever you go. The elderly play Tai Chi or do bodybuilding exercises here. Young people play football, basketball and table tennis.
Over the past 20 years, a large number of cities in China have undergone a brief but rapid urban expansion. Most of these cities are now facing social problems such as an aging population and a high prevalence of chronic diseases. A comprehensive environmental improvement program in the area was initiated in 2014 in order to create space for those who want to take a break from their everyday works.
Whilst not being as painful as a broken limb, animals like humans suffer from chronic and acute pain from gum infections, broken teeth, and bacterial spread through the circulation. A 16-year-old elephant in Pakistan is one such case. Madhubala, suffering for years from a dental infection caused by a broken tusk, has finally got relief thanks to vets, dentists. Named after a legendary Indian actress, Madhubala's eyes were taped shut, her legs tied to support her during sedation and subsequent treatment at a Karachi zoo. the vets had to use drills and other heavy surgical tools to extract the infected tusk. She is one of four African elephants being treated in Karachi by an eight-member team from global animal welfare group, Four Paws. A Pakistani court last year asked Four Paws to assess the health of the animals after local animal rights activists raised concerns about their well-being. England's Paradise Wildlife Park welcomes its new guest, an endangered red panda cub. The mother, Tilly, gave birth to the cub just 1 month after she lost her breeding partner, Nampang. Experts say Tilly had been under a breeding project for 4 years. The cub has been named Little Red, and his birth is being celebrated as a, quote, symbol of hope. Red pandas are classed as an endangered species and are on the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The bushy-tailed bamboo munchers dwell in high-altitude Asian forests, and their population is now fewer than 2,500. Lightning strikes are very powerful and misunderstood force of nature that we all often see being used in films. A spectacular lightning strike has illuminated the sky over the Scottish town of Dundee. A video from an eyewitness that captured the hypnotic scene has been shared on several social media platforms. The lightning in the clip can be seen sending several bolts in opposite directions. Below, a church spire is silhouetted against the lightning flashes. But lightning is not always spectacular, as sometimes it causes fire to tower and high rises. Last month, a wind turbine caught fire after being struck by a lightning bolt in North Texas, United States. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice, and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
نفس خیلی پیچیده است. واقعا موجود لایه لایه و پیچیده است. نفس خود ما.
Nafs or carnal soul is a very deep layered and complicated entity. Sometimes we are deceived by our nafs without being informed. Therefore, it is good for us to study about the nature of nafs and its impact on our lives. As Prophet Muhammad stated, the most dangerous enemies of a person are the Satan and carnal soul.
نفس میدونید مقصود از نفس اون بعد پست روح انسانه.
By carnal soul it means the lower animalistic nature of a human being. The human's soul consists of two important parts. One is the lower animalistic one, which consists of nafs or carnal soul, and the satanic temptations. Yet human soul has a higher aspect, which is the center of spirituality or heavenly attributes. If we develop our animalistic self, then gradually we will act like an animal that is only concerned with food and shelter. However, if we focus on our spiritual soul, we will move towards spirituality and highly divine attributes. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRibe English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio is a guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Hujjatul Islam Karimi. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh Karimi, and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Okay, today we want to talk about the concept of Al-Aza al-Husayniyah. As in Urdu they say Aza ki Husseini, or in Farsi they say Azadari. Also in English, roughly, it can be translated as the mourning ceremony, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. Ceremonies or processions held for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. The Shia community, Brother Karimi, Sheikh Karimi, is accused of having innovations regarding Azadari for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and holding, and say there was no such thing in Islam or Quran beforehand. Now, for today's discussion, we want to see whether Azadari or mourning processions has any Quranic roots or not in the religion of Islam. I mean, can we bring Quranic proofs for doing Azadari for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam as the most famous one and all the other infallible ones?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The first point that I would like to share is that because usually this question is asked by the Wahhabis, and they claim that, as you mentioned, this Azadari is a kind of innovation in the negative sense of the word, is a bid'ah, and people should be away from that. And one of the reasons is that it is not mentioned in the Quran. Now, the first question is that, is it necessary for all the permitted or recommended actions to be mentioned, even the obligatory actions to be mentioned in the Quran? Of course not. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the Quran, we find some general guidelines and instructions, and more details, we need to refer to the narrations. So when it comes to mourning for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, if you remember in one of the previous episodes, we talked about the fact that the Holy Prophet himself, according to Sunni sources, he has mourned for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So, for example, when it comes to the prayers which are obligatory, the daily prayers, do we find any verse in the Quran talking about the details of the prayers, like to say the morning prayer in 2 rakah and the Zohr prayer in 4 rakah? We cannot find the details of these even obligatory acts mentioned in the Quran. We need to refer to the narrations.
Yes.
So we shouldn't think that we find a very explicit verse talking about all the details of the religion, the obligatory rules and the recommended rules and so on and so forth.
Yes.
This is the first point. So we find many narrations in this regard, both in Shia sources and Sunni sources.
Also, the prophetic lifestyle of Prophet Muhammad had shown that he himself shed tears a lot, for example, on Ibrahim, his son, on Hamza, his uncle, on the martyrs of Uhud, you know, and the other battles. Yeah. You know, he himself cried and shed tears a lot.
That's a kind of
azadari. I mean, not in the group form or in the collective form, but personally.
We have it in collective form. Okay, like, as you rightly mentioned, when Hamza was martyred, the women in the city of Medina were crying, collectively, in a group.
Yes.
And the Holy Prophet says that, وَلَكِنْ حَمْزَ لَا بَوَاكِ يَلَّهِ. No person is crying for Hamza. And it is documented in even Sunni sources that for many years, for any person who passed away, first of all, people cried for Hamza and then cried for the diseased one. So, which means that the Holy Prophet confirmed the action of these women.
Yes.
They were crying for the martyrs of Uhud in a group. I mean, collectively speaking.
Yes, yes. And the title Sayyid al-Shuhada before Imam al-Hussein was given to Hamza.
Exactly.
And this is really nice for today's discussion. Okay.
So, this is one point that this is, a wrong expectation to claim that everything should be mentioned explicitly in the Quran. Now, the second point is that, implicitly speaking, the concept of mourning can be confirmed by the verses of the Quran. Okay. There are some verses in the Quran, as I mentioned, in many cases, the Quran is giving us just general rulings and principles. Now, let me share some of the verses of the Quran which refer to the concept of mourning, at least implicitly. We have one explicit verse. Let me share that before going to the implicit verses. And that is the grief of Ya'qub, Prophet Jacob, for losing his son, Joseph, alayhi as-salam. This is mentioned explicitly in the notebook of Quran, and this is a kind of azadari, this is a kind of mourning. It's been mentioned that we know the story of Prophet Yusuf, alayhi salam, that when his brothers took him and they threw him in the well, then Prophet Yaqub, alayhi salam, cried for Yusuf, alayhi salam, I mean, profusely for many years, according to some narrations. The Quran says, chapter Yusuf, verse 84, Ya Asafa ala Yusuf, he was very grieved about Yusuf. Wabiyattad aynahu min al-huz, his eyes had turned white with griefs. And fahuwa kadhim, and he choked with suppressed agony. Now, we are talking about a great prophet because of the fact that he has lost his son Yusuf. And of course, he's not dead. He is still alive.
Yes.
But he is mourning just for losing him. And in the same chapter we read, the brothers of Yusuf came to their father and said, Tallahi tafta'u tathkuru Yusuf. By Allah, you will go takuna haradan aw takuna min al-halikin. By Allah, you will go on remembering Joseph until you wreck your health or perish.
That's right.
And according to some, for example, Zamakhshari, one of the great Sunni scholars of tafsir, interpretation of the Quran, he says that he cried for Joseph for 70 years. And interestingly, we have one narration in Shia sources that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam was, somehow questioned by the people that why you are crying for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He said that, do you not know about the grief of Yaqub? Mm-hmm. He cried for losing Yusuf alayhi salam to the extent that his eyes turned white.
Yes.
And that was while his son was alive. Just he disappeared from him. He didn't know where he was.
That's right.
But for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, I saw that my father and 17 people from my family, they all were martyred before me. So how is it logical for Yaqub alayhi salam to cry for Yusuf alayhi salam and not for me to cry for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam? So this is a very explicit case in the Noble Book of Quran. Yaqub is mourning for sure for Yusuf alayhi salam for many years. Yes. To the extent that it's not a usual mourning.
Okay.
I mean, he became blind.
Yes.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir. Insha'Allah, insha'Allah,
insha'Allah, you'll find your way. And then we have some, as I mentioned, general principles mentioned in the Noble Book of Quran. One of them is the verse 23 of chapter Ash-Shura, قُلْ لَا أَسْأَلَكُمْ عَلَيْهِ أَجْرًا إِلَّا الْمَوَدَّةَ فِي الْقُرْبَى. Say, I do not ask of you any reward for it, for the mission of the Prophet, except the love of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam. And for sure, the love for the Ahlul Bayt and the love of the Prophet has different manifestations.
Yes.
And one of them is that we need to be happy when they are happy, and we need to be sad when they are sad.
One of the signs, in fact, is that, for example, when the Ahlul Bayt are sad, and we know that the greatest mourner for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam now is Imam Asr.
Exactly.
So he is holding such mournings, we can say, sessions for him. So if we love Imam Asr, we have to be like him.
Now, imagine you, for example, as a boy, you love a girl, and that girl, she is sad for any reason. Does she accept from you to show your happiness in mm-hmm. front of her? Of course not. One of the reasons that proved your love toward her is that when she is sad,
yes.
you need to be sad because of her sadness.
That's right.
So as Muslims, this Quranic verse is asking us for love for the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. And all people agree that one of the signs for this love is that when they are happy, we need to be happy. When they are sad, we need to be sad.
Yes.
And which sadness is greater than the sadness for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and the tragedy of Karbala? There are many narrations in this regard.
That's right.
For example, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has chosen for us some Shia who help us. وَيَفْرَحُونَ لِفَرَحِنَا وَيَحْزَنُونَ لِحُزْنِنَا. They are happy because of our happiness and they are sad because of our sadness and grief.
That's right.
And Imam Rida alayhi salam told the son of Shabib that if you want to be with us in paradise, then wafrah lifarahina, be happy because of our happiness and
That's
be
right.
sad when we are sad. So this is one of the principles in the Noble Book of Quran, the fact that we need to love the Ahlul Bayt,
yes.
and one of the manifestations of this love is to
yes.
mourn for Imam Hussein alayhi salam because of the sadness of the progeny of the Imam. The other verse in this regard is verse 32 of chapter Al-Hajj.
Mm-hmm.
The verse reads, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وَمَنْ يُعَزِّمْ شَحَائِرَ اللَّهِ فَإِنَّهَا مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ
Yes.
Those people who respect the signs of Allah or venerate the sacraments, then surely it is the outcome of the piety of the hearts. Now,
yes.
we have the concept of ta'zim sha'airillah.
Yes.
To venerate, to respect the signs of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
Now, there are many discussions about this title, this, I mean, concept, to venerate
Allah.
And sha'airillah.
Yes.
And the scholars believe that whatever, shows that you are, helping the people remember God.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sign of God.
Yes.
So,
and Nahzat al-Husayni, as a result, is a sign of the manifestation of divinity of Allah.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes.
So, for sure, this verse is including all the actions
yes.
which help the religion of God to be revived.
Okay.
And every year, practically speaking, we see that, that the morning ceremonies for Imam Hussein
yes.
alayhi salam increase the piety of the people.
The spirituality
of the people.
Okay.
And one of the reasons is that the statistics show that, less sins are committed by the people,
okay.
for example, especially during the first 10 days of Muharram.
And the month of Ramadan.
And the month of Ramadan.
Yes.
In the
yes.
communities which
yes.
these sessions are held.
Yes.
So this is, a reality that mourning for Imam Hussein alayhi salam is one of the ways through which we can do the ta'zim, the veneration of
yes.
the sha'air Allah, the signs and
sacraments. And the people find a kind of unity and conformity, among
mm-hmm.
each other, wearing black, giving endowment or their nuzurat for the sake of him, helping the poor. And, all in all, we could find this is sha'air Allah,
Exactly. What happens in these majalis is
yes.
that people come to learn the religion from the scholars. Important parts of every morning session
yes.
for Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Yes, that's right.
Religious scholars come to talk to people about God, about the Quran,
mm-hmm.
about the spirituality, and of course about the uprising of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So through these sessions, people increase
yes.
their connection to God.
Mm-hmm.
Let me share an interesting story which
Very
happened
good.
To me today. I was in a marketplace and I found two teens talking to each other. They were talking about, having some, illegal relations to some girls.
Okay.
And one of them said to the other, I heard that this is the month of Muharram. Let's do it after the month
of
Muharram.
Okay.
This is a reality. For many people, they stop committing sin during the holy month of Ramadan. This happens in almost all the Muslim communities. The same is happening, especially for the Shia, during the month of Muharram and Safar, and especially the first 10 days of Muharram, because of the fact that these sessions help the people remember God again.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the holy month of Ramadan people feel a kind of
commitments to their religious
exactly.
background, or at least they do not do sinning or committing sin in public.
Yeah.
Okay, they
and
do not do
the
that.
The same
okay.
is happening in these majalis for Imam
yes.
Hussein alayhi salam,
okay.
because the scholars talk about God, talk about the Day of Judgment, talk about the religion, the Quran, and so on and so forth, and the religious duties of the people.
That's right.
So we shouldn't think of it as a kind of innovation. As I mentioned, it is mentioned explicitly in many narrations. It is mentioned explicitly in the case of Yaqub, and implicitly in the verse of Mawaddat fil Qurba, in the verse of Ta'zim Shaha'ir Allah, and also the verse 148 of chapter An-Nisa, لا يحب الله الجهر بالسوء من القول إلا من ظلم. We do not have time.
You are not allowed to shout unless it is against a kind of oppression.
Exactly.
Okay, and for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, we are shouting for justice.
Exactly.
We are shouting in his morning ceremonies.
Thank you for that summary. Yeah.
Increasing our voice for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the oppressions that were done toward him. That's all right. All in all, we could say that we can say reviving the memories of Nahzat al-Husseini is in the same path of Sha'air Allah, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept whether Azadari or morning ceremonies for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam have Quranic roots or proofs or not. It was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
And thank you very much, dear listeners. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi aman Allah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. On this program, we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we will look at the controversy sparked by the release of 11 Hindu men in India who were jailed for gang-raping a Muslim woman and murdering her family. And we shall also discuss how the Chabahar port as the regional transit hub has emerged as a key area of economic cooperation between Iran and India.
20 years after the gruesome incident and 14 years after the court verdict, 11 Hindu men accused of gang-raping a Muslim woman during anti-Muslim riots in the western Indian state of Gujarat were set free just recently, sending ripples of anger and outrage across the country. The controversial decision to release the convicts was announced by the Hindu nationalist government in Gujarat on the day India was marking its 75th anniversary of independence and hours after Prime Minister Narendra Modi waxed eloquent about women's empowerment.
Bilkis Bano was 5 months pregnant when she was attacked by a sword-wielding Hindu mob in the small village of Chaparwad in the western Indian state of Gujarat in 2002. Age 21 at the time, she was gang-raped, while 14 members of her family were murdered, including her 3-year-old daughter. Bilkis Bano was the only witness of the horror. She survived the massacre and led a valiant fight for justice for years. In 2008, a court in Mumbai sentenced 11 Hindu men to life imprisonment on the charge of Bilkis Banu's gang rape and murder of her family members, including her little daughter and a day-old infant. Their conviction was later upheld by the Mumbai High Court. This week on India's Independence Day, all the convicts were released from prison on remission by the Gujarat government, sparking massive outrage. The men were given heroic reception and honored with garlands and sweets by members of the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party. Opposition parties and human rights groups have strongly denounced the decision to free them. In a statement, more than 6,000 activists described it as a grave miscarriage of justice. In a statement through her lawyer, Bilkis Banu said the news had left her numb and bereft.
The release of the 11 men in the Bilkis Banu case represents a major setback for survivors of the 2002 Gujarat pogrom who have for years fought for justice despite heavy odds. It has also brought back harrowing memories of the horror unleashed on Muslims in Gujarat. While Hindu-Muslim riots are not uncommon in the so-called world's largest democracy, the anti-Muslim pogrom of 2002 in the state of Gujarat came as a major embarrassment to the country that prides itself on practicing secularism and pluralism.
Gujarat riots, often dubbed as Independent India's first full-blown pogrom, erupted in February 2002 after a mysterious train fire that resulted in the death of 58 Hindu pilgrims was blamed on Muslims. According to various estimates, more than 1,000 Muslims were killed in the ensuing riots as angry Hindu mobs went on a rampage across cities, towns, and villages in the state, raping, killing, and looting Muslims. Prime Minister Modi, who was then Gujarat Chief Minister, was criticized for not doing enough to prevent the massacre of Muslims. He has till late refused to apologize for the massacre or even take moral responsibility for it. Over the years, courts have convicted many people for direct or indirect involvement in the riots, but the high and mighty were all given clean chits, including a close Modi aide and former Gujarat minister Maya Kudnani, who was called the kingpin of the riots by a trial court. The attack on Bilkis Banu and her family was one of the most horrific crimes committed by Hindu mobs during the riots. She had fled from her native village when the violence erupted but could not escape the horror. Her fight continues.
Question of how the society is placed today. It's not about just the death penalty or what crime or what punishment you want to give to this crime. It's about how relationships between men and women and the entire gender spectrum is placed.
Now to have more insight, we are joined by Mrs. Hiba Ahmed, research scholar and assistant professor at the University of Delhi. Welcome to the program, Mrs. Ahmed. Now, 11 Hindu men convicted 14 years ago for gang raping a Muslim woman and murdering her family members were freed from prison in India just recently. Now, do you think this constitutes a travesty of justice?
It's absolutely a travesty of justice. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But when we think about justice and when we think about law, we also need to think for whom the law is being made in a country. And right now, the law is absolutely unequal for the minorities and for the majority. We have to look at what happened when the case, you know, reached the court. At the same time, another rape had happened in the capital of India, which is Delhi, and it was Nirbhaya, which garnered a lot of attention from all over the world, from all over India. And like two judgments were passed simultaneously. One was Nirbhaya, and the other was Bilkis Banu's case. and the two judgments were completely different. It shows us what warrants a specific kind of attention in this country at this time. While Bilkis Bano's rapist was sentenced to life imprisonment, Nirbhaya's rapists were sentenced to death because that is what the country was demanding. This is another interesting thing in India where law takes its course depending on what the people of the country are demanding at a particular time. And I'm not saying here whether, you know, a death sentence is better or a life imprisonment is better, but just the fact that people were outraged when